Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Audiobooks are now bigger than ever, seeing phenomenal growth both in terms of downloads and revenue in the last few years. But they've existed for nearly a century. So why is their popularity surging? Well, Adam Maguire from the RTE Business Desk is here. So Adam, audiobooks are having a kind of a moment, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. And it kind of fascinates me when you have one of these kind of old technologies or ideas that kind of puts along in the background for years and years and then suddenly becomes really, really popular. And it's what's happened here because, you know, a lot of people would think about audiobooks as being relatively new, but they're actually 90 plus, close to 100 years old, really. They first came to market in the 1930s, but because of the limitations of technology, namely you could only fit so much audio onto one side of a record, about 20 minutes at the time, they were confined to kind of short stories and poems. In 1935, you had the first audio novel, which was Joseph Conrad's Typhoon. It was a four-record set. And we also had a version of Agatha Christie's The Murder of Roger Ackroyd. Both were produced by the British Royal National Institute for Blind People. And that's kind of what they were initially. Yes. It's an idea that someone had a visual impairment, they could listen to a book rather than needing to get a braille copy or have someone read it to them. And you eventually then had the book on tape, which I remember seeing in libraries and, you know, a handful of them. Then you had the book on CD. But again, they were kind of niche. You know, there was only a handful of titles available. You probably couldn't buy them in a bookshop. But fast forward to today, and it's a huge, huge business. Hard to put a global figure on it, but their estimates that the worldwide market was worth somewhere in the region of $8.6 billion last year and growing at a fairly phenomenal 26% per year. So projections are it'll be worth $30 billion by 2030. That assumes that that phenomenal growth continues for the next 5 years, which you know may not happen, but still phenomenal amount of money on something that was a niche a couple of years ago.
Yeah, astonishing growth, 26% a year. So what's changed then?
But I think it's a coming together of things that suddenly made it a great market for audiobooks. So, you know, the shift in technology is important because it's now a digital medium, so that gives you a few advantages. You know, it's more user friendly. So when you know the book on tape or on CD, you had to have a bundle of tapes, a box of tapes or CDs, and you had to swap them around or swap sides. Now you just hit play and stop whenever you like, and it picks up wherever you left off as well. It's also easier to buy them because it's on your phone probably, and you're carrying it with you all the time. So that means you're not going to have to remember to bring it with you. And there's other things as well around this kind of general audio revival, you know, music subscription services, you know, radio, podcasts. There's a whole new generation who've gotten used to the idea of listening to people talk at length on something they're interested in. So audiobooks aren't really a huge leap forward when you're used to that. And it also comes at a time when people feel like they've less downtime, they've less time to themselves, they're too tired to read in the evening time. So this is the way for them to keep up with books they want to read while they're doing other things like exercising or housework or whatever it might be.
And as you mentioned there, it's just so much easier to get an audiobook now, isn't it?
Yeah, really, like the access has improved hugely, really. You know, as I say, I remember seeing a book on tape in the library and there would have been a handful of different titles available. Now, though, you can easily download an audiobook just like you can a film or an app on your phone. At the same time, libraries here have audiobooks through the likes of BorrowBox. You have Project Gutenberg, which offers classics available for completely free. You have subscription services like Amazon's Audible. You pay a fee and you access their huge library of audiobooks. Spotify 2 years ago started offering 15 hours of audiobook listening as part of their music subscription. So a huge number of choice as well. And also lots of these specialist websites and even a magazine called Audiophile that specialises in audiobook recommendations. So the information is there. And, you know, it's also been a nice little revenue stream for some, you know, actors and voice actors as well, like the likes of Stephen Fry famously narrates the Harry Potter audiobooks. They've racked up 1.4 billion hours of listening on Audible, apparently. Andy Serkis does, who voices and plays Gollum in the Lord of the Rings films, he's voiced a version of the book trilogy. And then you have some people who are just kind of known as audiobook narrators. John Rafter Lee, he's won multiple audio awards, which I'm sure, as you know, is the Oscars of the audiobook industry. There's some people who will seek out an audiobook for the narrator rather than the book.
Does improve the quality of the product if you have somebody really good who knows what they're doing reading it. So the publishers then, how have they reacted to it all?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say it's not a niche thing anymore. It's not an afterthought. Like I mentioned the Harry Potter books, the audiobook came out 2 years after the first book, and I don't think that would happen nowadays. You look at the kind of new releases now, the audiobooks come out at the same time as the original as well. But they're also changing their approach as well. They're becoming more like audio plays. It's not just one narrator. For example, there's Audible have plans to bring out a new version of the Harry Potter books that's going to have have 100 actors as part of the voice cast. It will sit alongside the Stephen Fry version, but they're putting a lot of effort into making it basically into an audio play and a much more elaborate thing than it used to be in the past.
And then audiobooks for kids, of course, very popular as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Them and themselves, but you also have things like the Yoto Player, the Tony Box, Vox Box, which are basically little audiobooks for kids that use figurines or cards, and they're kind of advertised as screen-free ways of children being able to listen to stories, but they're getting kids used to this idea of listening to a story, and then, you know, as they get bigger, you'd imagine they'll move on to full-grown audiobooks.
Yeah, there's a whole other conversation to be had around whether people feel comfortable, you know, listening to an audiobook. Do they feel they've really read the book if they've just listened to it?
There is a big debate about that. Does it count as reading a book or not? And a lot of people have different opinions on that.
I remember in the early days loving an audiobook that I listened to and then having to go out and buy the hard copy because I felt that I hadn't really done it justice by listening to it.
You're the publisher's dream there,
yeah,
buying two copies of the book, basically.
I'm over that now. You'll be glad to know.
You're just full-blown audiobook.
Yeah, I'll happily listen to them. Thanks so much, Adam. Adam Guire there.